Welcome back for the second hour of Issues Etc. Marsha Montenegro joins us here for the next 25 minutes. We'll be talking to her about the paranormal, and in particular, how the paranormal is of a special allure to our children, where you find it. It's good questions to deal with as we come to you live this Tuesday, November the 21st. Then, in a half hour, we'll be talking with Dr. Paul Zimmerman about intelligent design. Marsha Montenegro is a regular guest on the program. She is a former astrologist. She's founder of Kana, Christian Answers for the New Age, and she's authored this new book called Spellbound, The Paranormal Seduction of Today's Kids. Marsha, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you so much, Todd.
What is the paranormal? Does it go beyond simply things we can't explain? That's what I usually think of when I think of a paranormal. You got things that are normal, and then you got things you can't explain. That falls into the category of the paranormal.
Well, in a way, yes. Of course, there are things that it seems we can't explain that might not be paranormal, but in the context of the book, it refers basically to occult activities, to the three categories of occult practices that are listed in Deuteronomy 18, 10 through 12, and those would be things like casting spells, divination, which we usually interpret as fortune-telling, and spirit contact.
Okay, so we're really talking here generally about an attempt to make contact with powers and with, as Scripture might say, powers and principalities that are... I'm grasping here because... you don't want to say that you have contact with the spiritual world because, of course, the spiritual world is both good and bad. Where does this paranormal category fall with regard to powers, principalities, and what Paul would then call the forces of darkness?
Right. Well, the paranormal in this case is those activities that are strictly forbidden by God, and what it entails is attempts to make contact with hidden forces or hidden powers or hidden beings. That's how I term it in the book. And nowhere in the Bible are any of these things endorsed. We are not supposed to try to contact spirits, which, of course, are the angels. We're not supposed to try to contact the dead. We're not supposed to try to read omens and get hidden knowledge or secret knowledge or read knowledge into the natural world. In other words, when you look at the sky and you know the planets are out there, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, etc., you can study them from a scientific viewpoint. There's objective data that tells us how far they are from the sun, how fast they move around the sun, etc. But we're not supposed to think that Jupiter means something in our lives or that Venus is the planet of relationships. It's reading a hidden meaning or looking at the lines on our hand and thinking that there's a hidden meaning in the lines of our hand and we can figure out our destiny through that. So those are the kind of things, those would fall under divination. There's two different views too. There are Christians who do not believe that there is any supernatural power except from God. So anything that appears to be supernatural in the occult, somebody casting spells maybe and then something actually happening, they would say is just totally fraudulent or is somehow has a natural explanation, which I agree is sometimes the case. But then there's also the school of thinking that there is some kind of limited supernatural power in the occult, or at least it appears supernatural to us because we don't know how it's working. And this is a power that is evil and is part of Satan's deception.
Okay, let's deal with the first one for just a second because someone listening to us says, I got a real easy answer to this and a real easy solution for all of it. Whatever it is that falls under the category of the paranormal, it isn't real, so it shouldn't concern me at all. Or worry me at all. What's your response to that?
Right. and I think a lot of people think that. Well, my response to that is these practices are dangerous in other ways, even if you don't think that they're real. First of all, God mentions them throughout the Bible. So I don't think that they're harmless or things we should dismiss. Why would God call them an abomination? Why would God forbid these things? In Isaiah 8, he says, don't go to mediums or spiritists who whisper and mutter. In Acts 16, Paul casts a demon out of the woman who has the spirit of divination. And that particular case, I think the Lord is showing us that there can be, at least in some cases, a demonic basis to these practices. You know, Paul didn't just say to her, oh, look, you know, we know you're just making this stuff up, or, you know, who cares what you say. He cast a demon out of her. She was possessed. Now, this also doesn't mean that all people who do this are possessed. I used to do these, a lot of these things. I was an astrologer. I had tarot cards, etc. But as far as I know, I could be wrong. I don't think I was ever possessed. I think there is a danger in the church of Christians dismissing all of these things as fraud, as all people who do these things, all psychics, all astrologers, etc., as frauds. And I often say when I speak on this topic, there are really two categories of people who do these things. There are the scam artists, and usually they are the ones who advertise, and they have big signs outside their home or their storefront shop that says, you know, psychic advisor, or sometimes they'll say spiritual advisor. You know, Madam Rosa will tell your future, or, you know, come for answers on romance or fortune or something. And it's kind of obvious. You know, they're luring people in. Usually those people are doing this as a business, and they know enough to say some things, but they're very good at reading human nature, and they kind of know what to say to people. Then you have the other category of people who really are invested in this in a spiritual sense, and they have spiritual beliefs that go along with these things. You know, people in the New Age, or some people who claim to be Christians even do this, although they often have New Age beliefs. And so you have people, and they think it's a gift from God, so they also are operating on a spiritual basis. So you have those two categories of people, and too often Christians think they all fall into the first category. But that is not what I was doing. That is not what any of my friends were doing. We were all totally sold out to this. We believed it. We felt that this was a spiritual tool to use these practices. There are people in witchcraft who really do cast spells. Now, do they have an effect or not? I think the people who are casting the spells are in more danger than anybody, because they are the ones who are opening themselves up to contact with fallen angels, you know, which is what I call demons.
Marcia, how much of this, you come to this with from the inside out, so how much of this do you actually have personal experience with? If you could just give us some kind of the categories of things that you used to do as a former astrologer.
Well, even before I was an astrologer, I had a lot of paranormal experiences. I had out-of-body experiences, and it started before I even knew what they were. I had paranormal dreams that gave me information about things I couldn't have known. I studied tarot cards. I studied a little palm reading. I studied numerology. I took psychic development classes. And I had a spirit guide, and that was before I did astrology, about 3 or 4 years before I studied astrology. So I was already involved before I became an astrologer. And, you know, I saw entities in my room. I had experiences of, it's hard to explain, but, you know, paranormal experiences of things that did not have natural explanations in my mind that I think were evil because of what I was getting involved in, but at the time I didn't think they were evil. So I never cast spells. I was never into witchcraft, but I had a lot of clients who were witches and Wiccans when I was an astrologer. I had friends who were, you know, mediums and psychics. I also, I also went to some spiritualist churches when I was in college with a friend who was doing it as a project, and so a group of us would go with her, and we went to, you know, 8 or 9 spiritualist churches over a period of time, and these are places where people claim to get messages from the dead. And also I, you know, had consulted psychics, and myself was developing what are called psychic powers. So my whole view on this is that there is an element of power in these things, but not as much as is claimed by those who practice it. However, whatever this power is, it's destructive. And it can really take over a person. So it's not something that one should dismiss, because it is actually very dangerous. And aside from the fact God forbids it, and then it lures you away from God's truth.
Where is the average kid in America? Because you have written about the lure that for our children in particular. Where's the average kid in America going to first come in contact with something like astrology, or something like the tarot cards, or something like the divination that you're talking about here?
I think one of the first places is on television. Television shows, including cartoons. And along with that, probably a close second, or maybe tied with that, would be video games. A lot of video games have occult themes, and they have characters who, you know, cast spells. And on the television shows, you have the same kind of thing. So basically, children are introduced to the concepts of these things, and they're presented as good things. It's not that the person casting spells is the bad character, but they're the good character. And, of course, we saw this in the Harry Potter books, was probably the most pronounced portrait of this kind of endorsement. But it had already started, you know, with other things on TV. And I think a lot of adults, a lot of parents are unaware of this, because they're not familiar with what the occult is. And that's the whole point of the book, is that it's such a big area, and it's very intimidating and seems very complicated. And so most people don't really even know how to describe the occult. So my book is a tool to help guide parents through what it is, based on Deuteronomy 18 passage and how we're seeing it in the culture. And so I give a lot of examples. Games are another area that children and preteens will come into contact with, the card games and certain online games, which just blatantly use occult and sometimes New Age concepts. It's just clear. I mean, there's just no denying it. It's just a fact. And I show that, you know, in my book. I give various examples of that. Movies, of course, are another area. Even toys. I don't know if Walmart still has them or not, but they were selling Zodiac dolls. So you would buy a Gemini doll for your little girl if she's a Gemini, and on the doll was the symbol of Gemini, and then a little card would come with her describing what Gemini is. So here right away, you introduce this little girl to the idea that she's a Gemini and this is who I am. So those kind of things are just, I mean, our culture is just full of them. I even found out about a cartoon after I wrote the book that's on Nickelodeon that kids like 6, 7, 8 years old watch, that's just full of occult and New Age terminology and concepts. It's called Avatar.
Marcia Montenegro is our guest. She's a former astrologist, founder of Kena, Christian Answers for the New Age, and she's authored a new book, Spellbound, The Paranormal Seduction of Today's Kids. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's go to the phones, where Joe is waiting in his car. Joe, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. I don't know if this question will be off the wall a little bit, but I'm wondering if your guest has ever looked at UFO kind of things, you know, study of aliens, things like that, if she thinks that would fall under this classification of paranormal. And I'm thinking of people who get caught up with wanting to make contact with aliens and things like that, and it's obviously very prevalent in our culture in the sense of movies and TV shows and things like that.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's a good question. Where would you put the whole craze toward unidentified flying objects, alien abduction, extraterrestrial contact? Where would you put that in all this?
Yeah, I would put it in this category. Actually, I wrote a short article on aliens and UFOs that's on the website of Watchman Fellowship. I don't have it on my website. But I kind of put it under the same category as ghosts. So this is what I say. There are four explanations. If someone claims to see an alien or be abducted or see a ghost, it could be either one. It's number one, it's either a hoax or a lie. Number two, it's imagination or delusion, or maybe a dream. That would all be the same, you know, same category. Number three, there's a natural explanation. Number four, it's demonic. So it's one of those. You know, I don't believe that I don't believe in aliens. I don't believe that there is intelligent life. You know, I think that God created man on earth, and that's basically, you know, that is it. And I think that if you look at people who get into the belief in UFOs and aliens, many of them have New Age backgrounds or New Age beliefs, or they come to have New Age beliefs through these experiences. And these experiences seem very real to them. Now, I had very real experiences, out-of-body experiences, and the entities that I call them entities, but I guess they were demons. But I didn't think they were demons at the time, so that's why I don't use that word. So, you know, that I saw, and some of my experiences are very similar to what I've read when people describe aliens that they see. The abduction experiences remind me of some of the out-of-body experiences I had. Now, I don't know if they're exactly the same thing, but if they aren't hoaxes or lies or, you know, dreams, then there's something demonic going on. I don't think I cover UFOs in the book because I'm focused on the culture, what's in the culture that targets children, preteens, and teenagers, and the UFO stuff. Although it's there, it's kind of its own category. It's a whole world unto itself. And that's why I don't even have an article on my website. But I put it as far as explanation. Yeah, I think it can be demonic, just as the explanation is for people who say they've seen a dead person.
It strikes me, Marcia, that fundamental to the lure, whether it's a child or an adult, and I think this must have proven true for you as well. If you had, say, tried the tarot cards or tried astrology, and it came up wrong every time, you failed at it or something like that, and there was no payoff in terms of what you thought was actually working, no predictions made or whatever, you probably would have given up on it pretty quickly, which leads to the objection that a lot of people will raise and probably the allure for many young people, which is this stuff seems to work.
Exactly, exactly. I remember my father, who was an agnostic, asking me after I'd been doing astrology a few years if I believed in it. And I was incredibly insulted by his question because it implied that I was doing something I didn't believe in and that I was just pretending to believe in it. And I was really, really mad. And I said to him, how could I possibly do something like this that I don't believe in? How could you even think that, you know, of me? And I said, of course I believe in it. And I believe in it because it works, and I've seen it work, and I see it work all the time. And this is what you will hear over and over again from people involved in these activities. They will say, it works. Astrology works. So nobody cares in astrology about all the scientific arguments against it. That could matter. And they're aware of the scientific arguments against astrology. It doesn't matter because they see it as a spiritual tool and it works on these inner esoteric laws that the scientists don't understand. And so, you know, the astrologers think, you know, we know that it's working. And I think that, this illusion that it is working is it just works so well that it keeps people, you know, involved in it, and they get even into it even more deeply, and it gets other people into it. And I have several explanations for why astrology works, for example, and I have a whole chapter on astrology in my book. And also, one of the chapters I have in Spellbound towards the end is where I talk about the overall approach to take with your children and dealing with these tricky issues. I have a whole chapter on responding to objections that you'll hear from children and especially teenagers. And one of the objections is, but it works. And so I have a whole answer on that to give them. But you're right. If it seemed to offer nothing, people wouldn't get involved in it and they wouldn't be interested in it.
Marcia, can you stick with us for just a few minutes on the other side of this break?
Sure.
All right. I've got an email, maybe several emails from listeners here on this question. I'd like just to give you the opportunity to respond to them because I'm not going to be much good in responding to their particular concerns. Our calling number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Buzz, if you put that email up that was up there just a moment ago, I'm going to read this before we go to the break and give Marcia a chance to respond. This comes from an anonymous listener writing us via email. I had several experiences throughout my life. I've never been able to make sense of them. Ever since I was a small child, I could look at a person's shoes. And she acknowledges that's kind of funny, or he acknowledges that's kind of funny, and know all kinds of things about people. I would then go up to a complete stranger, tell them things that I could have no way of knowing. I didn't have a way of understanding this because I was raised as a Christian. Then suddenly it stopped until I visited a teacher of mine who was into reading auras and spiritual healing. Talking to him about those things made me long for the ability again. And that night I had an experience when I was approached in a dream by a man who had a message for my dead grandmother. I awoke before getting the message. I got up, moved around a bit, and went back to bed. Before my head had hit the pillow, the man was standing in front of me and asking me to follow him in order to get the message. After being asked several times, I said yes, and the man turned into an evil entity right before my eyes. And at that moment, I was thrown back. I felt like my soul was being snatched out of me. I was awake. I could not call out for help, even though my aunt was just several feet away. I could hear everything. I finally got out with the prayer, "God help me, God help me." And just like that, it stopped. What do you think was going on? Did this kind of experience sound familiar, Marcia?
Yeah, I get lots of emails like that. you know, for one thing, I would want to question the person who emailed first about their faith. I'm not clear that they're a Christian. They just said they're raised in a Christian home. But what they're describing is very demonic. I think that demons can give information to people. I think that's why psychics and astrologers and mediums sometimes have correct information about people's present and past. And that's why mediums can seem to get information from what they say are dead people. Of course, it's not dead people, it's demons, about the person's dead relative, because why wouldn't demons know some things about various people, dead or alive? I don't see that as a big deal. So this person, maybe by looking at people's feet, at their shoes or something, I never heard of that. That's kind of strange.
Well, hold that thought there, Marcia. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll let her finish her response to our anonymous emailer. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. We'll round up things with Marcia Montenegro and then talk with Dr. Paul Zimmerman about intelligent design after this.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Your favorite programs on AM 850 KFUO are made possible in part by the generosity of supporters like Ray and Lois Dankenbring of Baldwin, Reverend Chuck Herr of High Ridge, and Roger and Dee Thake of Baldwin. At AM 850 KFUO, we appreciate the prayerful and financial support you show with your gifts.
On the next Midday Living Jubilee, live at 11:05 on AM 850 KFUO. Join Paul Clayton and me, Diane Summers. We speak with Melanie Dobson, the author of Together for Good, a novel. And Judith Matz talks about how to prevent holiday overeating this year. It begins at 11:05, Living Jubilee, on AM 850 KFUO.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney says he'll ask the state's highest court to order that a marriage amendment be put on the ballot. Citizens have spoken by petition, but the state legislature is dragging its feet, refusing to vote even though they're now in special session. Kim Troby has the story.
A record number of signatures have been gathered. Still, Massachusetts citizens are being ignored. Governor Mitt Romney is taking action.
More than one quarter would like this initiative to go forward, but the majority refuse to actually meet and hold the vote. We will file an action with the courts calling upon the judiciary to protect the constitutional rights of our citizens, and that is specifically to allow our citizens and their ballot initiative effort to go forward.
The Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts has not been family-friendly in the past, but Chris Mino with the Massachusetts Family Institute says there's still hope for the future.
This court, under that same justice, has ruled in on previous situations like this that the legislature is constitutionally obligated to vote on citizens' petitions. So we are assuming that they will hold that same ruling.
Governor-elect Deval Patrick is a staunch supporter of gay rights, and Romney says he'd like to get the matter resolved prior to his term.
I do believe that the rule of law is what's at stake here. This is not just about marriage. It's about whether or not the legislature will follow the Constitution or not.
Romney says ignoring the wishes of 170,000 people would be a step toward tyranny. For Family News in Focus, I'm Kim Troby.
Massachusetts is the only state where same-sex marriage was established by judicial fiat. If the will of the people is not carried out, the first state in the Union to start constitutional democracy may be the first to abandon it. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Hi, I'm Tom Baker with Long Gospel on AM 850 KFUO. Next time, we will continue our study entitled Scripture Interprets Scripture, continuing with Revelation chapter 1. We hope that you'll be with us there to take a look at what a difference it makes when Scripture interprets Scripture.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekdays at 2:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
You can read an excerpt of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, titled The Great Jesus Debates, on our website, issuesetc.org. It's a book about the battle in the early church over the person and work of Jesus Christ. The Great Jesus Debates is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. The Great Jesus Debates costs $14.99 plus shipping and handling. That title again, The Great Jesus Debates.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're finishing up a conversation with Marsha Montenegro, author of the book Spellbound, A Paranormal Seduction of Today's Kids. Talk about children and the paranormal. Right before we went to that break, Marsha, you were making a response to an email from one of our listeners who had had what sounds like a bizarre set of experiences. Finish up your thoughts there, if you would.
Right. And then the emailer mentioned they had gone to a teacher. I also would like to know what teacher they were talking about, because this teacher clearly believed in these things, auras and things. And this got the emailer interested again, and so the emailer had this strange experience and saw somebody in the room. Well, I think that undoubtedly if this was not imagination, it was a demon. I have heard many experiences from people, and I had them myself. If you show an interest in these areas, and the person actually said they missed meeting with this teacher, made them miss having these things after these kind of experiences had stopped. So the person wanted them again, and so it started up again. And so if you yourself want to have them and are not willing to give them up, I think that they will continue to happen. And even after you're saved, I think, I had some things happen, and I had to pray and ask God to take them away from me, because I think God wanted me to know they were evil and to ask Him. He wanted me to show that I did not want to participate in these things anymore. So I think it's very, very alluring, and I don't know, everything described in that email sounded very demonic to me, and it sounded like the person opened the door again through an interest and contact with this person who was talking about auras. And that's really all it takes. I mean, you can go to a psychic one time or go to an astrologer one time, and it can set some things in motion that you can get sucked into.
One other quick email here before we wrap up our conversation with Marcia Montenegro. This one comes from Eric in Olathe, Kansas. He says, would you ask your guest whether there is any amount of access to the occult appropriate for children? Should it be viewed intentionally, but as a teaching tool? Should innocent-looking sources of New Age material be completely avoided because they hide the true nature of the occult? I guess he's asking here, essentially, how much do you expose them to it by way of teaching them to avoid it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that you don't deliberately expose your children to these things. I think what you could do, a two-part answer. One is, I think when you think they're old enough, you can teach them from Deuteronomy 18, 10 through 12, because after all, that is God's word, and there's nothing dangerous in God's word to know. So you can teach them what those things mean, and that's what I do in my book, and then say there are people who really do these things, but they're evil. Let them know from the time they're young these things are evil. And then as they get a little older, they're going to be exposed to them. Even if you don't have a TV, unless you put them in a cave or a closet, they are going to be exposed to them through friends, books, the internet, something. And then you can bring it up, or if you know they've seen something, or if they ask a question, they're going to hear about ghosts and haunted houses, the horoscope columns in the newspaper, it's in a lot of magazines. They're just going to come across these things naturally. And I think then you can, you know, it opens more ground for having a discussion with them. So I think it depends. It depends on the age of the child, what they've been exposed to already, and what they may have questions about. And I think if they ask questions about it, if they hear someone say something about a ghost or something and they say, well, do ghosts exist, you should sit down and talk to them about that and let them know, you know, what God has to say on this. We're, you know, we don't contact the dead, and ghosts don't exist because people can't hang around after they die. And you don't have to give complex answers. You don't have to teach them the occult to answer their questions. And in fact, I mean, my book is a tool for parents to talk to kids. I have suggestions after each chapter on how to talk to children or teenagers about that topic, and you can adjust it to the age and maturity of your child, or you can, you know, just leave it out entirely if you don't want to talk to them about it. But most children, you know, I'd say, you know, 98% of the children in this country by the age of 8 or 9 have been exposed to some expression of the occult, even if it's just in the form of entertainment on television or in a video game.
Marcia Montenegro is a former astrologist. She's founder of Kana, Christian Answers for the New Age, and she's author of the new book, Spellbound, The Paranormal Seduction of Today's Kids. Marcia, thanks for giving us those extra few minutes, and thanks for being our guest on Issues, Etc.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Todd, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
And you as well. Well, in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Dr. Paul Zimmerman. We're going to talk about intelligent design for the remainder of this hour. And then we've got audio open lines for your questions and your comments. We'll be talking about men in church, the lack thereof, and be listening to a PBS Religion and Ethics Weekly Newsweekly feature on men in church and a solution that some think is going to bring men back to church. We'll get your reaction to that coming up here in about 25 minutes on Issues, Etc. Dr. Paul Zimmerman holds a doctorate in chemistry, and he is president emeritus of Concordia University, Chicago. He's author of an article in the latest Lutheran Witness magazine titled By Design, Not By Accident. Dr. Zimmerman, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Is it that stark? Either we are here by design, by the intent of a creator or designer, or rank accident according to evolutionary theory?
I beg your pardon. What's the basis of your question?
Well, is it either or? Is it either by design or by accident?
Well, basically, the situation has arisen in the past 20 years. The experimental evidence has come out of microbiology and biochemistry has shown that there are a large number of organisms in the cell particularly that are so complex they cannot possibly have come from an evolutionary process. That is, just little changes here and there and so forth, because they have various individual parts, all of which have to be perfect, all of which have to work the first time. And so I would say that there is a complete incompatibility. You cannot combine the concept of evolution, that is, and we're talking about Darwinian evolution, that's by mutations and survival of the fittest and so on, with intelligent design. Actually, in the intelligent design movement, which has been running actually now for almost 20 years, and now has just gained a great deal of prominence, a great deal of importance, has threatened that whole Darwinian concept. So I would say there isn't any middle ground.
What is it that is at the very heart of, if we want to understand the evolutionary theory, that is being so much defended nowadays, vociferously defended now, especially as intelligent design has come to the fore? What is it we need to know about the very basic premise of the evolutionary theory, Dr. Zimmerman?
The basic premise of evolutionary theory, going back to Darwin and so on, and stoutly defended today, almost in a, evolutionists are almost in a tizzy. They're scared to death by intelligent design because it is threatened Darwinism. But the concept there is that in the beginning, somehow, first of all, if you want to be complete, you got to go back to the cosmos, the origin of the galaxies, of the stars, and of the Earth itself, all of which are very, very carefully crafted. And then the origin of life, that life arose from non-living material. It's somehow the first cell was created, and then it became a multicellular, and then it developed and developed further and further until we have the fantastically complicated living things that we have today, with a brain, for example, which is far better than any computer which has ever been invented or ever will be invented. That whole thing is, according to Darwin and the Darwinian evolutionists today, basically something which they say it developed. Things just kind of bumped together. And there were little changes here and there, and the bad ones were washed out, the good ones were kept, and eventually you get to the point where you are today. My feeling is that it takes far more faith to believe that everything came into existence by itself, happened by itself, developed by itself, than it does to believe in Creator God.
The Darwinists would and do assert that they have all the evidence on their side. Is that true, Dr. Zimmerman?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. That is basically an untruth. If you're talking about the some change within the change of the species, for instance, different kind of dogs or the size of bird, the beak of a bird and so forth, there has been some change. But basically, and I quote this in the article, the fundamental things which have not been proved, and there's no proof for evolution, is how life could originate, how the genetic code, a tremendously complicated genetic code, which is far more complicated than any program that you could ever have on a computer, that developed by itself, multicellular life, that you go from one cell to multicellular, or that there have been transitional forms in the fossils, you know, that you have the simple, and then you can just trace the development of different forms of life, the different phyla and the different forms and so forth, finally the species. Not true. It isn't there. And today, 150 years after Darwin, the fossil record really isn't any more helpful. And I was just reading on this, and all of these things I'm saying I've got, you know, evidence of from various writers and so forth. The fossil record doesn't prove. And then there is absolutely no proof that these irreducibly complex molecular machines that are inside the cell, a thing which actually is like a little motorboat that travels, its propeller goes something like 17,000 RPM and can reverse within a fourth of a revolution. That those things could have happened by itself, there's no proof for it, absolutely not. What you have is a basic philosophy of materialism or naturalism, and the evolutionists in general, and of course many scientists are evolutionists because that's what they were taught when they went to school. They don't practice evolution in their research and so on. And I've got an article written by a man who is a chemist, and he said that the great discoveries of science nowadays and so forth, the things which we know, do not come from an evolutionary theory. What you have is an atheistic religious principle. And you have now people like Richard Dawkins, who is a prophet, Oxford University, just put out a book called The God Delusion. They are just frightened out of their wits that the present evidence of science is so strong that it points to a creator. Things couldn't have developed by themselves, could not have, become more and more obvious, and they're in an absolute tizzy. As a matter of fact, one of the California state universities recently got their whole freshman class together, required them to come and hear a lecture that intelligent design is wrong. Now, can you imagine that? Here is a part of their orientation. They're saying, no, we've got to uphold this atheistic, and that's what it is. Evolution, any way you cut it, is atheistic. And Dawkins and others are certainly emphasizing that now. There's a new age. A man by the name of Jonathan Wells recently wrote a book that all your readers listeners ought to get a hold of. It's called Darwinism and Intelligent Design. And this man, Jonathan Wells, wrote this, just came out this year. And he's got a PhD in religion. He's got a PhD from Berkeley in genetics. Absolutely excellent person. And he points out that intelligent design is a wave of the future. We're experiencing a revolution in scientific thought. There are some 600 or more scientists that have signed a statement from the Discovery Institute in Seattle, Washington, that says that Darwinism simply cannot explain the development of living things today. And these are scientists, top scientists from all over the world. You'd probably have 60,000 if it were not for a tremendous pressure against it. If you are a scientist teaching in a university and you don't have permanent tenure and you come out in favor of intelligent design, you can count on it, you're going to be canned. And the literature is full of evidences like that.
We've talked with other guests on this very same subject, and they have said many of the same things that you have said. They've said, look, if you are watching the trends in science, you are finding two things happening. Honest scientists becoming less and less confident about the Darwinian theory of evolution, and some of them actually breaking rank and saying, no, look, it just doesn't work anymore. We used to think it was plausible, and now it's becoming there's too much evidence against it.
Right.
And then the others who are digging in and saying,
yeah,
look,
and they're digging in on a philosophical basis. It's interesting. Time magazine, I think it was September 13, had an issue. Or was it October? And a couple of weeks ago, anyway, I had an article about this Dawkins and a man, another gentleman whose name is, just a minute, let me get it, Francis Collins, who is the head of the Human Genome Project here, who happens to believe in creation and believe in God. And these people were arguing, and Collins was pointing out that the universe and the natural laws, physical laws, and astronomical laws are so precise that it couldn't have been an accident. And the great astronomers come up with that. They confess it. They say this thing is just specially tuned for us. And the answer that Dawkins gave him was stupid. He said, well, there's probably billions of universes out there, and one of them had to come out right. Now, how sensible is that as an answer? That's the kind of evidence they're coming up with.
So in other words, in order for evolution to work, they have to posit something for which not only do they have no proof, but something for which they never could have any proof.
Yes, totally ridiculous.
And this in the name of science.
You see, the things particularly, when you're dealing with something that happens in the past, you can't conduct any experiment on it. Now, you can examine the DNA of men and monkeys and of other forms of life and see if they're related. And there is some relationship there. But there is no evidence from it that one came from the other. You see, if you're going to have two arms, whether you're a monkey or a man or whatever, you're going to have similar genes developing them. If you're going to have a skull, you're going to have a similar gene. But there are a few genes that are different, and that's what makes the difference. And there's no evidence as to how those things came into existence. And they're far too complex to just have happened by chance.
What do you make of those who say, look, we can have our cake and eat it too. We can have an intelligent designer or even a creator God who creates via the means of evolution, and therefore no one has to give up anything. I have probably heard this a dozen times in the last year from people who say that Christians don't have to give up anything and evolutionists don't have to give up anything. We'll just go for theistic evolution.
Well, they don't understand theistic evolution. If they do any reading at all, they will discover that theistic evolutionists, by and large, have no use for intelligent design in the first place. In the second place, a good, sturdy evolutionist makes fun of people that are theistic evolutionists. He said, you're trying to eat your cake and have it too, and it doesn't work. The lines are so clearly drawn between them. And we don't have the time to do it or the possibility of doing it is talking this way, but it can be demonstrated that it just plain ordinary doesn't work. If you're going to be an evolutionist, you're not going to buy into intelligent design. Doesn't happen.
Okay, now intelligent design as a set of ideas limits itself. We've talked with William Dembski and other advocates of intelligent design and say, look, we are making a very limited and really what they consider to be a modest claim, and that is, if we find complex systems that contain information, we expect that information to have a source. Information doesn't arise out of a random system. Organization doesn't arise out of chaos.
That's right.
And they're making this very modest claim, at least it seems to me to be a modest claim. And many of them are six-day creationists, but some of them will say, no, I don't have any dog in that race at all. What should Christians know about intelligent design, and what are the limits of that way of responding to the evolutionist mindset?
Well, basically, I would say if you're talking what a Christian should do, there are two things. One is he should realize that there are two sources of information. One is what you find in nature, and the other is what you find in Scripture. And I've always said, and when I used to teach, I'd say, if those two conflict, then one or the other is wrong. Now, I believe in creation. I could say, let's put it this way, if I were not a Christian, I'd still not be able to accept evolution because it just doesn't make any sense to me as a chemist. I know too much about chemistry. But at the same time, that's not the reason, fundamental reason. I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian because I believe in the Holy Scriptures. And as I mentioned in the end of the article there, the psalmist who says, you know, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hand. Now, that really says that if you look at the heavens, you should deduce that there is a God. But it still doesn't tell you anything about Jesus Christ. You have to have the gospel, and that's the most important thing, comes only through revelation. Incidentally, as far as embracing something which is inherently atheistic, which evolution is, you have to come under what Psalm 14 says. It says the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And believe me, that's what these leaders of the evolutionary movement, the Darwinists, are saying now. There are just any number of new books that have come out, all the same thing. Dawkins at one time said that religion is worse than smallpox. It's a virus, and it's too bad it can't be exterminated. You have to read some of these people to see how vicious this thing is. This isn't something where you can say, oh, let's join hands and get together. It doesn't work.
Dr. Zimmerman, finally, with only a minute before we conclude our conversation, do you think that the evolution as a theory and the advocate of evolution, do you think this is a dying breed?
Well, I'll tell you what this Jonathan Wells in his new book that I mentioned, Darwinism, Intelligent Design, says at the very end, and I have it here. Just take a second if I can find it real quick here. I can't get a hold of it this fast. Here it is. His point is, a growing number, I'm quoting, of bright men and women have the courage to question Darwin. to study intelligent design and follow the evidence wherever it leads. They know they are in the midst of a major scientific revolution and the future belongs to them. That's Wells, who is an expert in this. In other words, as the younger people come up and they see more of this and so forth, they're going to see through the actually the political stance of the evolutionists and say, hey, it's not backed up by science. Intelligent design is. And what intelligent design says, by the way, it is not to be confused with creationism. It doesn't come from creationism. It comes from scientific observation. But they're going to say that there's evidence here of a creator, and of course the Christian would say, well, that's God. But that's, I think we are seeing, and I agree with Wells here, there is a major revolution going on, and the reason substantiation for that is, there is just a fury on the part of these evolutionists now who are suddenly just screaming crazy and calling the intelligent design people all kinds of names. They call it simply disguised creationism. No, I think there's a big change coming.
Dr. Paul Zimmerman holds a doctorate in chemistry. He's president emeritus of Concordia University, Chicago, and he's authored an article in the latest Lutheran Witness magazine titled By Design, Not by Accident. Dr. Zimmerman, thank you for your time.
That's my pleasure.
Well, when we come back from this break, we got the last hour of Issues, Etc. straight ahead. We're going to devote that last hour to audio open lines. PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly had a very interesting story. It has to do with those who have noticed something. We've noticed it here at Issues, Etc. We've been talking about it for probably 3 or 4 years on the air. The lack of men in church. In fact, if you watch the trends on Sunday morning, there are fewer and fewer men sitting in the pews of any given church, and the numbers continue to go down. We've talked about the feminization of Christianity, or the emasculization of Christianity. Everyone now admits that there are fewer and fewer men in church on Sunday morning. The big question is, and here is where the rub comes in, what does the church do to get them back? Well, in this piece we're going to play for you on the other side of the break during audio open lines, there are some churches who think they found the answer. It amounts to, as far as I can tell, men's church. Oh, it was maybe 15 years ago that Bill McCartney decided he had an answer for getting men spiritually active again. It was called Promise Keepers. Where is Promise Keepers now? I mean, they're still around. It's a dwindling group. It was going to take the church by storm. It was going to raise up a generation of men for the church. That was the promise it made. And yet the numbers grow fewer and fewer, even with the bump of Promise Keepers. When we come back, we're going to listen to PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly, a feature they had on men in church. I think it should be titled Men Not in Church. And the proposed solution to that problem by some. I want your reaction to it as well. It's audio open lines 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, and we are coming to you live this Tuesday, November the 21st. This will be the last live hour of audio open lines this week. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Men in Church after this.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.